You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It ain't the left side or the right side, and it must be the fin side.
Good morning, Dolphins fans. Welcome to another episode here of On the Fin Side with Kat and Paul. Follow us on Facebook, Twitter, all of our social media outlets, finfanatic.com and the Fan Sided Network as well. I'm Brian Kat, NFL. Paul is fanatic underscore pick. The Dolphins play the Falcons this Sunday, noon Central, 1 Eastern. The Falcons are favored by 2.5 points, which I think if we saw that line before the year, we would have laughed at it. But it's been 41 days since the Dolphins have won a football game, following last Sunday, where the Dolphins lost to the Jaguars, who hadn't won a game in 404 days. So the Dolphins are every piece of criticism they deserve right now. And they probably deserve a little bit more criticism, at least in my mind, for what's being talked about right now, where Paul – You've heard the stories here, and this is getting to the point now where obviously it's more than just rumors. John McClain from the Houston Chronicle reporting that he expects a Dolphins-Texans deal to be done before the trade deadline. He actually said he expected it to be done during the week, which that hasn't happened, so maybe nothing is going to happen, but we'll see. He also said, John McClain also said, there is a real chance that Deshaun Watson is the quarterback for the Miami Dolphins on November 7th when they play the Houston Texans in Miami. There's so many ways to go with this here, man. I'll throw it to you. What, just your gut reaction on do you think this is going to happen, and what you think?
Oof, that's a lot of different things to unpack there. Even if it happens, I wouldn't be surprised if Deshaun Watson is not the quarterback on November 7th against the Texans. Right now, Roger Goodell and the NFL, I think, are staying out of it with everything because of the fact that basically Watson is mutually agreeing to just hang out and work out, which it sounds like he's there every day working out independently. The second we start seeing him on an active roster on game day, I think that's the point that Roger Goodell turns around and goes, whoa, 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 not with all this stuff going on right now.
I agree. And this is what I say as far as if we put everything that he's been accused of doing, the whole legal process, we put that to the side for just a minute, is I do not trust the Miami Dolphins, who have screwed up every offensive personnel decision over the last 3 years, to properly assess this risk. Okay. And two things absolutely would need to happen for me to be able to stomach this risk. Number one, you would have to know for a fact that Deshaun Watson is going to play this year. And number two, you have to have inside knowledge somehow. And I don't see how that's possible that you know that these accusations here are going to be resolved. And I don't see any way how those two things are going to happen.
Yeah, I mean, and for me to feel comfortable with everything hanging over him like this, you would almost have to find a scenario. And I know some of the reports are that there's a three-team trade being worked on to trade Tua. But you would almost have to find a scenario where you keep Tua right now, because you don't know if and or when Deshaun Watson is going to even be allowed to play football again.
Yeah, I don't, and I've heard those same rumors too. And those are the part that are kind of, it's kind of being thrown around right now, about how possibly like Washington or Denver may be involved, may send a pick, basically the Dolphins that they used to trade that to Houston. If you have three teams involved, I don't see how you protect those picks. I don't see how you put in stipulations that you're going to get that pick back. I mean, what you're going to trade Tua to Washington, and then if it turns out he is suspended or he does go to jail, Washington doesn't have their quarterback anymore. I mean, I might be missing something on that, but I don't even see how that gets pulled off.
No, you basically have to sit there and that doesn't work. It doesn't work. It would have to be an independent trade, and I would not move Tua this season, because we're not going to know. There's no magic wand that's going to clear up Deshaun Watson's legal issues between now and the trade deadline.
Definitely not. And you know, that's the reason I say that the Dolphins would have to know. They would have to know that this isn't going to get cleared up by November 2nd when the trade deadline is, but it's going to be cleared up shortly thereafter. And I don't see any way that they can know that factually. And even if Watson isn't suspended now, you're exactly right. He hasn't been playing and the legal process is continuing. So there is no reason for the NFL to step in yet. When the NFL gets media pressure on this, and they will, and the Dolphins will, then you can bet Roger Goodell is going to, as in his own words, protect the shield of the NFL in the eyes of not just the sports world, but the world in general.
Yeah, and there's going to be a bunch of ifs in what I'm about to say. And I know I've said something similar before. But if Stephen Ross is applying pressure internally for Deshaun Watson, Stephen Ross is a hypocrite. After Bullygate, where a couple of words were dropped and, you know, a blow-up doll was brought in for alignment, you know, and like a couple of things that didn't involve, you know, words like actual assault, words like sexual assault, words like, you know, everything that's being filed against Deshaun Watson right now, and then to be like, but we need that guy, like, it's mind-boggling. I mean literally he started the Rise Initiative, the Stephen Ross Rise Initiative, for, you know, equality in sports and things like that, and to turn around and be like, yeah, but about that guy, get him now.
Right. I'm 100% with you. You could not have said it any better than that. I mean, and the thing is too, is what we know right now about Deshaun Watson is that he hired personal masseuses and he claims everything was consensual. That is a best case scenario that we're talking about, even if everything else gets thrown out. So at the very, in a best case scenario, the guy's a slime ball who makes terrible decisions off the field. Okay.
And in a best case scenario, that's still solicitation.
Yeah. I'm not even going to get, I'm just not saying, even gonna like, get into that.
There's still criminal charges that come up in that best case scenario 90% of the time.
Got it. You probably know more about that than I do. And
well, you made that, I'm not going to go off that insinuation, but yeah.
No, that came out wrong. Paul, the legal terms.
Yeah,
no, Paul, it's all those legal terms.
It's anyway, true. It's which crime is he admitting to right now?
Right, exactly. And so let's get past that. There, obviously, there are risks associated with this, and to me, reckless and irresponsible risks if you're going to take those on for the Miami Dolphins. So a team that is who. offensively has screwed up every personnel decision over the last 3 years, just tripping over one coffee table after another in terms of these decisions. Now, when the stakes have never been higher and they've never been more desperate, and they're going to pull off one of the biggest, most controversial trades in NFL history without a hitch, without missing a detail, somehow I don't think so. So here's where I'm at now, Paul. Okay. Just over the last couple of weeks, really since this past Sunday when the Dolphins lost to the Jaguars, I am a Tua Tagovailoa fan the rest of the way. He's the only one in this organization, quite frankly, that I really want to dominate the rest of the way. Of course, you've got players on this team who are playing hard. Some of them are going to be part of the future. Brian Flores and Chris Greer, they're done. I'm done with them. Okay. Done. And the rest of the year, barring a complete 180 on the season that would have to start with a win over the Falcons this weekend, Tua is the one I'm pointing at and saying this guy has been done wrong since he's been in Miami.
Yeah, and I know they've tried to do him right, but not all the things ring true as intelligent moves as far as that goes, especially when you look at the whole offensive coordinator debacle, not just this year, but last year as well. You know, it's you design your offense last year after drafting Tua and planning to put him in around Ryan Fitzpatrick. And you get Chan Gailey, who makes no secret out of the fact that he's the biggest Ryan Fitzpatrick fan on the planet. Like, that man is going to basically get Madden 27 in a few years or whatever number they're up to for that. And he's going to design Ryan Fitzpatrick to put on any team that he puts out there. Like, that's just who he is. He could get the Tampa Bay Bucks, and he's putting freaking Ryan Fitzpatrick on there and cutting Brady. Like, that's... And then this year, you go, okay, Charlie Fry likes Tua. We're going to let him call the plays, even though we have two offensive coordinators. But they're going to...
Which was reported by Dave Hyde this past week that...
The first four weeks
of the season. That Charlie Fry was actually calling the plays in. Not the two offensive coordinators you hired.
Right. And basically...
What an organization.
By all reports, the two offensive coordinators basically just sat over on the bench by themselves discussing what plays they would run. Like it's just like... So you just got this quarterback's coach going, you like me, so I'm going to call this stuff. Like, you know, and he's just calling what he wants, regardless of what these guys are saying off behind him. And that's just broken. Like, it's broken. Like, if you're going to do that, just make Charlie Fry the offensive coordinator and make those guys quality control or some other BS. Like, it's so broken. And then the play calling was so bad. Like, there's a
few here's what I know. I'm sorry. Finish your point there.
There's a few plays where basically it was just a broken scenario where I'm really hopeful with Jacoby Brissett. Like, if Fry's calling the plays and Brissett's the quarterback and you only have Fry calling the plays because he loves and knows Tua, why would you have him call him for Brissett? Have one of your other three geniuses, because there are plays that I have to imagine Jacoby Brissett just got the play call wrong through the headset. Because there's no way Charlie Fry should ever call the play again after that safety in the Raiders game.
I agree with that. And if your decision is for Fry to call the plays, Charlie Fry should be your offensive coordinator and get rid of the other two guys. I mean, these are things that, you know, when I was 15 and I started watching football, you know, religiously, I thought, oh, yeah, having one offensive coordinator is a good idea. Dolphins said, no, we're going to cram as many people into that room as we can. And we're going to have them duke it out for the plays. Okay. So let me go back, Paul, to April 2020, when the Dolphins made Tua the fifth overall pick in the draft. What if I had told you from that point, this is what's going to happen. In his rookie year, the Dolphins are going to start him before he's ready. They're going to pull Ryan Fitzpatrick after winning two games where the Dolphins outscored their opponent 61-17. Then after Tua shows a lot of promise, right after that game against the Arizona Cardinals where he looked like a star, and then the next game where he has a solid game in a win over the Chargers against Justin Herbert and beating the Chargers there. The next game, when the Dolphins have won five in a row, they're going to pull him in the fourth quarter of the Broncos game. And then they're going to pull him again later in the year. They're not going to make him team captain the following year. They're going to put him behind the worst offensive line in the league. They're going to surround him with the worst group of running backs in the league. And the Dolphins agree because they abandon the running game in the first quarter every week. They're going to give him four offensive coordinators in 2 years. And they're going to try and fail to replace him with somebody accused of being a sexual predator in an ongoing investigation. If I had told you those things, that is how they're going to develop Tua Tagovailoa, what would you have said?
Wow. I mean, that's
it's disgusting.
That's a textbook for how you develop a young quarterback in the NFL right there. Isn't that like, you know, the idiot's guide to developing a quarterback, where it's just like, oh yeah, we got this. Let's go. Like, I mean, and don't get me wrong. You need to add to that too that Tua could barely walk at the start of the preseason last year. Like, and he had no leg strength in that drive leg for being able to throw the ball. Like,
I'll amend that to say start of around draft time, that was the case.
But you know what, like, they had that little hype video where they show him walk for 2 seconds on the beach. Like, that doesn't scream to me this guy can run. It's like, holy crap, he's walking again. Let's go. Fifth overall pick.
Got it. And some people in the chat saying their excuses for Tua. No, it's called reality. Yeah. When you put a quarterback through what I just described, what you're saying is that same quarterback, what they really should be doing is dragging an absolutely incompetent organization with the most incompetent people running the offense, drag them kicking and screaming to greatness. And the two major points here that I want to say are offensive line and running back, where you are the worst in the league in those two areas. Okay. Good luck trying to develop a quarterback with the worst offensive line in the league. And the Dolphins have made every wrong decision along the way. So I'm not saying, look, Tua may not be good enough. I've said that from the beginning. I don't think he's 6 foot and a half. He doesn't have the greatest arm. You know, I can see a way where, hey, he doesn't get any better from this point forward. I can absolutely see that. And I think there are a lot of Dolphins fans who are so much on the side of Tua that don't really understand how good he needs to become to even be the eighth or ninth best quarterback in the AFC. I mean, let's go down the list here. Four quarterbacks: Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Josh Allen, and Justin Herbert look like superstars. And they're what, 26 and younger, all of them? They're not going away. Then you've got three of the four first overall picks, or three first overall picks in 4 years: Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, Baker Mayfield, who are in the AFC. They're not going anywhere. And then even when you get down to Derek Carr and Ryan Tannehill, you're talking about quarterbacks who have Tannehill, sickens me to say, has 61 touchdowns and 17 picks over the last 3 years. Carr has 58 touchdowns and 21 picks. You've got to be really good to be Derek Carr. And he's probably the eighth or ninth best quarterback in the AFC. The Dolphins need to improve at the quarterback position, whether it's Tua or whether it's somebody else.
And two things from that I want to point out right there. First and foremost, and I don't want to dive far into it because I know we got to preview the Falcons game in a few minutes here. But Tua looked good last week, I thought, overall. He looked improved to me. And the Tua we've gotten back, I do like some things that I've seen, even though I'm not saying he's the guy. I've never been the guy that stood up and said, Tua's the quarterback messiah. I've never said that. But he does have very good accuracy, and I thought he made some better decisions last week than we've seen from him. The other thing I want to say there is, all of these people saying, like, oh, you're making excuses for Tua. You're making excuses for Tua. Guess what? They're the same folks that said the same thing when we were talking about Tannehill and his development. and the coaching and the misuse. And suddenly Tannehill goes elsewhere, and they're like, oh, this is just the same old Ryan Tannehill. And then, like, they're like, well, why didn't we keep him? Like,
well, and some of that, yes, I agree with you. I mean, to me, there are two reasons Tannehill didn't work here. Number one, he had Adam Gase and he had Joe Philbin, boneheads. I mean, and bonehead offensive coordinator after another. And then some of it was bad luck, where at the end of his fifth season, he was playing the best football that he had ever played at the end of the 2016 season. Tore his ACL in 2016, tore it again in 2017. 2018, they started off 3-2 with him. Then he hurt his arm and was out for 6 weeks. Brock Osweiler came in. And then after that, he basically shouldn't have played the rest of the year because he could barely throw the ball. So he's out for over 2 years. He goes to the Titans. They immediately surrounded with Derrick Henry. He immediately stays healthy. Some of that's bad luck too. I get that, but I understand your overall point there. So talking about the Falcons game here, Paul, and I know we're a little crammed for time. I want Tua to go in there and throw for 400 yards and 5 touchdowns. That's what I'm hoping for. And no, I don't think he's going to do that, but I mean, that'd be crazy. But last week, he did have a good game against the Jaguars overall. He had an embarrassing interception. He missed a few guys that were open deep that he didn't see. But overall, I mean, 320-something yards, 2 touchdowns. I don't blame him for really anything that happened last week. I mean, if they had won that game 23-20, I would have made Tua the star of the game very easily. And this week against the Falcons, you're going up against another really, really bad pass defense, allowing a quarterback rating of 109.5 to opposing quarterbacks. They're also going to be without Dante Fowler, who just went on IR, their best pass rusher. This is even with Fowler in the lineup, this has been one of the worst pass rushing defenses in the NFL. You would hope that this offensive line can at least do a respectable job against a defensive line this bad. But in getting Devontae Parker back too, presumably 1 week away from getting Will Fuller back. Yeah. The table is set for Tua to go out there, especially with all this talk going on and him to light it up.
Yeah, no, I mean, you look down the quarterback ratings that they've allowed this year. I mean, yeah, Tom Brady had almost a 130 quarterback rating, but Taylor Heineke with that 127.1, Jalen Hurts 126.4, Daniel Jones, who's been figuring it out still threw up a 90 for a quarterback rating. The only negative quarterback rating really was a 63 from Zach Wilson, who seems barely able to hit. I mean, his only saving grace is that he's barely able to hit a defender as well as an offensive player at times. Zach Wilson's horrific. And still threw up a 63 rating. So if the Tua that showed up last week shows up this week, he should be able to push that ball downfield. You should be able to tear apart their secondary with Gesicki, with getting Mac Hollins involved like they did last week. I really, really like Mac Hollins and Jalen Waddle being on the same side of the field together in that little stack that they were running last week. The two of them seem to play very well off each other. And it sounds like I think we're getting Devontae Parker back this week.
It sounds like it, yeah. And speaking of Jalen Waddle, if he is in the slot, he is likely going to be matched up with Richie Grant, Paul's draft darling at the safety spot, who he wanted to draft as the first safety when they took Javon Holland. And he's played pretty well for him, I think. Holland's been right now a pretty good pick too. And then on offense, for the Falcons, Kyle Pitts.
Don't say
19 targets over the last 2 weeks. He had 9 catches for 119 yards and a touchdown against the Jets in London when they played last. Falcons were on a bye week last week. And it looks like Eric Rowe is going to not only be not the tight end eraser, but replaced largely by Brandon Jones. So that'll be a fascinating matchup there to watch. And Matt Ryan, over the last three games, granted, he's played really bad pass defenses, played the Jets, the Giants, and believe in Washington. So really three of the worst you can find. But still, 85 for 123, 69.1% completion percentage, 868 yards, 8 touchdowns, no interceptions. So Matt Ryan has been playing very well over the last three games.
You mean the three games where Kyle Pitts emerged?
I'd say two of those he emerged, but yes.
Yeah.
He also didn't have Calvin Ridley either. So he's coming back this week, missed a week with a personal issue. Calvin Ridley had over 1,300 yards last year.
Yeah, but I mean, it does say something when Kyle Pitts emerges and suddenly Matt Ryan looks better. So, I mean, you shut down Kyle Pitts in this game, it's going to be a huge, huge help for the defense. I mean, and let's face it, we need Tua to light it up this week. 400 yards doesn't feel out of the question. 5 touchdowns does for him, if that makes any kind of sense.
Well, 400 is high for anyone, and so is 5 touchdowns.
Yeah, but Miami doesn't run the ball. Don't forget that. So,
oh yeah. So maybe if he throws the ball 60 times, he will. I'm not predicting 400 yards or 5 touchdowns, but I think Tua, I tweeted this earlier. I don't even want to see him smile in pregame warmups. I want him to be all business, and I want him to shut everybody up, at least for this week, to the point where the Dolphins don't take this catastrophic risk at the quarterback position with Deshaun Watson, which is currently being reported. And on the offensive side of the ball too, Mike Gesicki, gosh, get him under contract as soon as possible. And if not, you better franchise tag him for next year, where he'll probably get $13 million. And look, Gesicki's going to get a contract somewhere 5 years, $75 million in that range. He's going to get a lot of money when he gets paid, which goes back to the Dolphins offensive coaching staff. Paul, do you want to guess, just throw out a percentage, Mike Gesicki's been healthy all year. What percentage of plays do you think he has been on the field this year?
27.
No. 27? It seems like it.
It does.
64.5%. And he only has been on the field 40 more snaps than Durham Smythe. And in comparison, if you look at, and look, I'm not saying he's as good or he's in the league of Travis Kelce or Darren Waller, but you look at those two players, Travis Kelce is on the field over 85% of the time. And in one game, the Chiefs were blowing a team out. That's why he wasn't on the field more. Darren Waller's on the field 89.5% of the time. Mike Gesicki, 64.5%. More than one out of every three plays, they are taking Mike Gesicki off the field. I mean, I just don't know what to do with that level of stupidity.
Well, I could live with it if they were doing it in a way where he'd come off for a play or two, and then you go out and you just hit the home run with him. Because, like, it's – you see them panic because they line him up. Because even when he's out there, he's not being utilized most of the time. And that's why it feels like 27%. It's, you know – 90% of the time he's on the field. It feels like he could just run wherever he wants to with no one covering him, and they're not going to throw it to him anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep. It's... Ugh.
Yeah, so the Dolphins are also getting likely Devontae Parker back. He's going to be matched up probably with A.J. Terrell, which is a really good matchup, because Terrell is out of that cornerback class from 2020 with Jeff Okuda, C.J. Henderson, Noah Igbinoghene, Jeff Gladney. By default, he's by far the best guy drafted out of that group. Not saying much, but that'll be a good matchup. I think where the Dolphins need to take advantage here is with Jalen Waddle in the slot against Richie Grant, who, even though you know, is a promising player, cannot match with Waddle's speed. But he's still a rookie, and Waddle is too. And Waddle had 13 targets last week, 10 catches for 70 yards. Please get this guy deep. And now that Tua has shown the willingness to throw the ball downfield, I think he will in this one. So, Paul, let's get to those predictions here for the Dolphins versus Falcons game. 41 days since the Dolphins have won. Do you see them coming out ahead?
I'm gonna throw down 27-24 Miami. I think it's going to turn into one of the weirdest aerial battles ever in this game, where Miami uses their deep threat in short yardage yet again and pushes the ball up the field. The guy's like Smythe while you've got Gesicki standing there with his arms out like, dude, I'm right here. I think Mac Hollins is going to have a big week this week, though. I really do.
I, on this show, it's very rare that I predict the Dolphins to win a game where they're underdogs, as people have, who have listened typically know. I am predicting the Dolphins win this game 42-17.
Ooh.
Tua comes out, guns a-blazing, and the wide receivers are a massive mismatch against the Falcons' defensive backs, and the Falcons can't pressure Tua in this game enough for it to matter. I see the Dolphins breaking out in this game. It's not reflective of what we've seen the last 5 weeks, but I think Tua is going to come out with something to prove in this one, like his career is on the line with the Miami Dolphins, because it might be when you take a look at these rumors that are swirling with Deshaun Watson. So it'll be fascinating, and we will be here on Sunday night. We've got all the technical difficulties worked out, so we are good to go on that. Paul, anything else you want to add before we sign off?
Nah, man. I'm excited. Hopefully we get that win this week.
God, we have to. I don't know how much more yelling I can do. I don't know how many more adjectives of incompetence I can say on the show. Well, or the Dolphins.
That actually, the other thing I'll add to is I hope one way or another this Deshaun Watson crap gets put to bed. I mean, I can't wait for November 2nd just so, you know, feast or famine, this stuff is done till the end of the season.
Listen, when in February, before the accusations toward Watson started, I said there is very little I would not give up for Deshaun Watson to be the quarterback of the Dolphins. That has changed with these legal issues, as well as I can no longer say that I am confident that this is a championship level defense. Just get Deshaun Watson in there and everything will be fine.
Our coaching would make Watson look bad anyway.
Talent wise, I think Watson has the ability to transcend a terrible coaching staff. I think he would just ignore the coaching staff and move on.
I just pictured Charlie Fry calling these stupid ass plays into Deshaun Watson and seeing him in the middle field, like look back and go, what? What?
Imagine telling Deshaun Watson when he comes in, he's got to answer to three offensive coordinators. He's going to say, I don't answer to one. So, as well as other authority figures. So,
seeing Deshaun on the friggin' sidelines or out on the field with that stupid play call in the Raiders game, and I know I keep going back to that one, but it was just the most egregious bit of coaching I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, and as somebody that survived Cam Cameron, Adam Gase, et cetera, that's saying a lot. But I'm just picturing Deshaun Watson in the huddle when they call that play, looking at everybody going, no, hold on, time out. I got to go talk to this guy. Like, just,
yeah.
What?
Yep. So we'll see. And we'll be here Sunday night to yell at this. Here's my other prediction, my negative prediction. Matt Ryan gets hurt. Josh Rosen comes in and takes down the Dolphins 17-10. That's my
– And both touchdowns are to Kyle Pitts.
Yes. And Richie Grant has two picks. That's Dolphins continue to find more creative ways to disappoint us. So hopefully it doesn't happen. That's going to wrap up our show here. And by the way, I'm sticking with my first prediction. I was just making a joke with the second one. That's going to do it for our breakdown of the Dolphins versus Falcons matchup and the ongoing Deshaun Watson news. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, all of our social media outlets, as well as FinFanatic.com and the Fansided Network. And if it's not on the right side and it's not on the left side, it is on the Fin side.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.